Amen. Be seated, please.
Morning, church. It's good to see everybody this morning. Remember that in 2 weeks is our second annual Sing. I know that I've already reminded everybody twice, but do it a third time. It's dark in here. Is it dark in here to anybody else? No. Kind of depressing, actually. I think about it. Really is dark. These old paneled ceilings. We got to paint these neon green or something and light it up. Is that what it is? Well, Gene, I don't know how to do that. Hold on a minute. Yeah, that's not in my contract. I don't have to. Yep, we're going to pretend that. I might know how to do it. Hold on a minute. This isn't part of the sermon. I just don't like things being dark. Did I do anything? I did one. All right, well, we got one, so I'll just try to hang out over here, I guess. Yeah, so September 16th. That's too bright. No, I'm kidding. No, I'll turn it back. I think they don't turn these on because preachers sweat, but if you don't know me, I don't sweat. It takes quite a bit to make me hot, so, you know, by all means, let's turn them on. If you're not planning on coming on the 16th, you know, we ask that you kind of take a look at your plans and ask, you know, what's more important, what you have to do or Jesus, and, you know, make a decision. Seriously, if you can come out to the singing, that'd be great. We had great singing last year. We have great barbecue afterwards. Remember, everybody bring a side and bring a dessert. You don't have to bring 9 sides, but you do have to bring a good side, not just any side, but bring a good side. And if you got a couple friends, then bring them. If you don't have any friends, then pick random people that like to sing. Remember, it is at 4:30. It is not at 6 o'clock. I actually had somebody last week ask again. So we still have in service at 6? No. So we are not. 4:30, and then we're done at 5:30, and then we get to eat. If you've got your Bibles, I'd like for you to, I know where we looked at a while ago in 1 Timothy, we're going to go back there, but I want to give you time to get there. If you will take your Bibles or your phones or iPads, whatever you've got, and go to Ecclesiastes chapter 10, verse 19. We're going to read this verse together. I mean, not like together. I'm going to read it. Y'all are going to follow along. Ecclesiastes 10, verse 19. It's a weird verse because we don't have enough of those. Chapter 10, verse 19. We're going to read it, we're going to decide what it means, and then this week and in the weeks to follow, we're going to talk about the same subject for quite a while. If you're visiting with us, we're trying to make our way through the book of Matthew. We have not made it all the way through. We keep getting interrupted with the Lord's Prayer or some other topics, and when we get done with this topic over the next few weeks, we will return to the book of Matthew and finish the year talking about that gospel. But today is the first lesson in a series about a particular subject. Ecclesiastes chapter 10, verse 19. Verse 19. I'm reading from the old NIV. The feast is made for laughter, and wine makes life enjoyable. But money is the answer for everything. Let's do this again. A feast is made for laughter. Wine makes life enjoyable, but money is the answer for everything. Well, they pack a lot in that one verse, didn't they? Some of y'all are thinking, what kind of sermon is this going to be? You know, I'm going to get free to do a lot of stuff I couldn't do before. It's not going to be that kind of sermon. How do you read this verse? Do we take it sarcastically? Like, you know, if you want to have a good time, drink some wine, but, you know, money, well, that's the answer for everything. You know, kind of not really, but we kind of act like it is. Or what if we read it, and when we read it, we read it with some truth behind it, okay? So what if we read it like this? If you want to ignore your problem, then just laugh it off. Right? If you want to forget about your problem, drink it off. But if you want to fix your problem, you're going to need some money. Now, over the next few weeks, this is what our sermon series is going to be on, money. And this is not leading up to a big giving campaign where Bob Turner gets up here and says, now that we've heard the wise words of Scripture, reach into your... Now maybe we will do that. I don't know. But that's not the reason we're doing it. The reason we're doing it is because what I'm afraid is happening is that the church neglects to really talk about things that matter in the lives of people like us. And there are things that we can't get away from. There are three things, actually, we cannot get away from in this world. Now, we can preach against it, and we can make rules about it, but there are three things that are involved in most Christians' lives. Money is one. Unless you're going to Mars, money is going to be a big topic in your life, okay? The second is sex, and the third is pain. So money, sex, and pain. How you deal with those three will determine just how good of a Christian you are, all right? And I've said that before. But everybody in here has experienced pain. Everybody in here has had to deal with sex. Everybody in here has to deal with money. And anybody who says, well, I don't want to worry about money. Great. If you live in the United States, you're going to have to worry about money. Unless you have a sugar daddy somewhere, or unless you've got a woman who's just, you know, going to pamper you, you don't have to worry at all. Maybe that's like a 0.5%. Some of y'all looking at each other like, Some of y'all wishing it was like that, but it's not, is it? Money, we're going to have to talk about money. And we can't get away from it. And the reason we can't get away from it is because there are two sides to this money business. And as I've told y'all before, when we talk about the two-sidedness of things, some of us go way over here, and some of us go way over here, all right? And I don't think the Christian life is determining which side you're going to be on. The Christian life is determining how am I going to balance it, okay? So on the one hand, we all know that money shouldn't control your life, right? On the other hand, you got to have money. I mean, my dad taught me early, son, make a lot of money, save a lot of money. My dad still tells me, you're not going to get ahead in life just by saving money. You're not going to do it. You've got to figure out how to make more money. But when I hear my father say that, and then I go back to my father's a preacher, by the way, and then I go back to the Bible that he preaches, and I hear all this stuff about Jesus and what he says about money, how do you balance those two? You should make more money, you should save more money, but the love of money is the root of all evil. So I should love it, but don't love it too much. I should seek it, but don't seek it too much. How do you do that? How do y'all love your spouse, just don't love her too much? Some of y'all have mastered that. But I mean, is that what he's saying? That's why it takes a few weeks to talk about it. And I want us to, this morning what I'm going to do is kind of show you some different aspects of money. And with every aspect, there are two sides to it, and I want us to see both sides. Rich people in the Bible have an important role to play. Jesus did not have any money. But when Jesus was buried, in whose tomb was he buried? A rich man's. So, well, I don't need money. That may be true, but you need some rich people. You need people with money in your life. Jesus somehow had somebody who had money, and he didn't just have money, he had money to have a nice tomb. How about this? In Luke chapter 8, verse 3, one of the women who followed Jesus, her name is Joanna. She's the wife of Cusa, and Cusa is the manager of Herod's household. Cusa makes a lot of money. How do you think Jesus had the money to walk around and do what he needed to do during the day? How do y'all think that happened? Maybe Jesus woke up and like manna, there was some dollars on the ground, there's some coins on the ground, and we just go sweep them up into our hands, and then we tell the disciples to go out and buy the things we need. Judas was the keeper of the money, but where do you think the money came from? Let me tell y'all where it came from. I know some of y'all don't want to hear this. It came from the women. It came from the ladies. You could say it didn't, but you have a tough time. The ladies wrote the check. They just did. They funded Jesus' ministry. And so, on the one hand, money, we can't be absorbed in it, but on the other hand, Jesus needed money to not only do his ministry, but to even be buried. However, Jesus has some pretty pointed words. How about these two? Because these are the two we all know. Matthew 19, verse 24. It is easier for a camel to go where? Yeah, we are. Through the eye of a needle. Than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. And I know y'all have probably heard some of those sermons where they found this needle gate and some camel gate. And really what it really means is if you got money, it's hard for you to go to heaven. That's what it means. There's no point in doing a 45-minute sermon to tell you a 2-second point. If you got a lot of money, it's hard for you to go to heaven. Why? Luke 6, verse 24, Jesus says, "Woe to those of you who are rich." King James says, "Because thou have already received thy comfort." If you're already rich, you already got a lot of money, what you need Jesus for? You buy your own salvation. That's not true. But unfortunately, that's what we start thinking. So there's two sides to this. On the one hand, Jesus needs money. On the other hand, Jesus says, don't need it too much. I'm going to give you four things this morning I want you to remember. And over the next few weeks, we're going to kind of go back to these four over and over as we begin to look through the Bible at how we're supposed to handle money. But these four are going to get us started. These are kind of the big four that we have to understand about money. You may not like it, but it's just biblically true. All right, so here's the first one. Number one, when it comes to money, we all have to remember it's not yours. Okay, we all understand that? When it comes to money, we all have to remember it's not yours. Now, I told you at the beginning, remember there's two sides to this stuff. So let me show you how this doesn't always work this way. In Acts chapter 4, so in Acts 4, the church is broke. Y'all ever heard of, remember we used to have those makeup Sundays? Yeah, makeup Sunday. Speaking of which, no, I'm kidding. We have makeup Sunday because we all, because the church is broke. You know, we're in the red and we need to get back to the black. All right? And I know some people said, I just don't like how these modern day churches, they start getting in the red and they can't afford that. And it ain't got nothing to do with being modern. Modern day church doesn't mean that the first century church wasn't broke. We think that the first century church that we really want to be like were just experts in money and finances, and they never went broke, and they always had a balanced budget. Read Acts 4. The church is broke. They're broke. Their benevolence budget ran over. They've given out too much money. And y'all might think, well, that's fiscally irresponsible. Maybe. But you've never gone broke before? Some of you are shaking no. See me afterwards. I need to talk to you about how you never went in the red, ever. Church went in the red. Because they're helping so many people, they spent more than they had. And so a wealthy man, they had a wealthy member. We have some wealthy members here. They're wealthier than the rest of us. And a wealthy member whose name is Barnabas, who owned a nice little tract of land in Wilson County. Not really. We'll say Williamson. I don't care where it is. But he's got a nice little tract of land. One of those commercial properties, that sell for more than you bought it for. Barnabas sells the land, comes in here on Sunday morning. JR's counting the money, opens up. It's a check from Barnabas for what he sold the land for. And we know it is because we all read the paper. Well, some of us here are nosy, read the paper to see what people sold their stuff for. And we know that's what it was. He sold it for $1.2 million. We got a check for $1.2 million. This was Barnabas' money. It wasn't the church's money. It was Barnabas' money. He sold it. There were two individuals who were also members of that church. Y'all remember their names? Yeah. When I was a kid, everybody called them Annas and Sapphire. So I mispronounced their name for like 30 years. In Acts chapter 5, Ananias and Sapphira, we learned that Barnabas wrote that check. And we all started shaking Barnabas and saying, appreciate it, brother. Appreciate you saving the church from their financial disaster. Appreciate you getting us out of the hole. We had makeup Sunday. We raised 1.25, but you're the one who put in 1.2. We all know where the money, and Ananias, and I'm about to say their name wrong again. Ananias and Sapphira, they're members of the same church, and they witness all of us just really loving on Barnabas. Some of us giving him our donut. We each get one donut. Now Barnabas got eight because we all just giving Barnabas our donuts. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, we had donuts after service. Come to church more. So Barnabas has all these donuts. Barnabas is getting these accolades. Ananias and Sapphira go home and they say, Barnabas is really getting a lot of attention. We've got land too. Ananias and Sapphira are wealthy too. We got other wealthy members. Now they're from, pick another county, Rutherford County. I'm picking these counties at random. Don't nobody get upset. So they decide they're going to sell their property. Next Sunday, not even makeup Sunday. The next Sunday, JR is counting the money again. All of a sudden, the next Sunday looked like makeup Sunday. Ananias and Sapphira put in a check too. But here's the difference. Barnabas sold his property. And he said, I'm going to sell it to give to the church. And he wrote a check, and we put it in there. Ananias and Sapphira sold their property for the same reason. We want to help the church too. But some of us are nosy, and we read the paper. What did we find out? They both gave the money. But Ananias and Sapphira held back. You know, we sold our property. We had to pay the commission, and that's fine. But we didn't want to give it all. Because if you give it all, you might not have any tomorrow. So we're fine with giving money. We just don't want to give everything. But here's the text I want you to concentrate on. In Acts 5, verses 3 through 4. I've never noticed these words by Peter until this week. But what he said to Ananias and Sapphira almost contradicts what I just told you about money. Look at what he's chapter 5, verse 3. Peter says, Brother Ananias, how is it that Satan has so filled your heart that you have lied to the Holy... Sound like one of those health and wealth preachers now. That you have lied to the Holy Spirit and have kept for yourself some of the money you received from the land. Now, pay attention to this part. Didn't it belong to you before it was sold? And after it was sold, wasn't the money yours to dispose of? What made you think of doing such a thing? You have not lied to humans, you have lied to God. Did y'all notice what Peter said? It's your money. It's your money. And after you sold it, it's still your money. There are those of us who say, well, it's not my money, it's God's money. No, I think it's your money. It's yours to dispense with. So when I tell you it's not your money, you also must remember that God has given it to you to manage. So in a way, it is your money. You're not allowed to use this as if you don't have a boss. And you're not allowed not to do anything with it. Y'all remember the parable of the talents in Matthew 25? Jesus gives everybody talent, or the manager gives everybody a talent. This guy's got this much, this guy's got this much, this guy's got this much. We all got the same amount. One guy can triple his investment, the other guy doubles it. The other guy stuck it in his mattress. He grew up during the Great Depression. He knows how this rolls. I ain't giving my money to no market. I ain't doing that. Master comes back and says, man, you have worked to make the most of what I left you. Gets to the last guy, whom we would all say is the best one. He just stuck it somewhere and didn't take any risks, didn't do anything. Jesus says, you're the worst one. What happened? Because God has left you money to do something with it. I don't mean the talents means dollars. It just means that if God has left you something, your option, it will never be do nothing with it. You've got to do something with the money. Miles Ezell was a member here longer than I've been alive, I think. Miles' father, I think, was an elder here, was he not? Miles' first wife was a great servant here. Second wife, too, but Ms. Ezell, even there are a lot of us who still kind of, she was the mentor to a lot of the ladies here. Legend at Unit Church of Christ. And Miles raised his children and raised a lot of people here at Una with the same kind of mentality. And I wasn't here long, and I already knew if Miles speaks at all, you listen. But Miles says, work hard, make a lot of money, and give a lot of it away. But he had all three. Work hard, make a lot of money, and give a lot of it away. Somehow we've got to have both. We've got to understand that money's not mine, but it's mine to do something with. And here's the second part. Your understanding of money will depend on how you understand life. So how you look at money will depend on how you look at your life here. Y'all know the song, This World Is Not My Home? I said this a million times. I love that song, but it is your home right now. We all have to understand where we're going. And if we all understand that heaven is our final destination, how you handle money needs to be influenced by where you're going to end up. There are a lot of us who look at money and use money without any regard for future. And I don't mean heaven. I mean some of us don't even look to like this afternoon. Some of us use a credit card as if there's absolutely no limit whatsoever until you swipe it and they say, ma'am or sir, what? Decline. I was paying for my, I'm always working on my car because I don't know. Because I have a lot of them, because there's a lot of kids, and I don't know. But I feel like I'm always paying for a car, paying for some kind of oil change or tires or something. And I'm at the car place 2 weeks ago. This is after I had left it there overnight on it by accident. So this is the next time. And I give him my card, and there's other people in there, and he swipes the card. How long does it take to swipe a card and sign for it? Like 10 seconds maybe? So I swipe it, and he's talking with the guy, and I'm checking my watch. Because y'all know me, I operate by this thing. And I look, and he's talking with the guy, and he looks down, and he swipes it again, talking with the guy. He looks at me, talking back with the guy. And he doesn't swipe again. He looks down and keeps talking to the guy. The guy's leaving, and he keeps talking with him. And I'm kind of waiting around, and I start pacing, and I'm getting antsy, and I'm checking my watch because, man, I got to go. And the guy is still talking to his previous customer because that previous customer won't leave. And I'm right at the edge of saying, hey, I know you guys are having a great conversation, but I got to go. No, I mean, and I know, like, I support having great conversation, but I got places to be. I kind of feel like we need to move this. I'm right on the edge of that, and finally the customer says, see you later, and he leaves. And the guy looks over to me, and as soon as he looks, I know what he did. He didn't want to tell me my card was declined in front of Mr. Talk-A-Lot, who just left, because he might say, hey, preacher's card got declined. He didn't want to say it, but he looked at me, and I said, don't say it. And he said, all right, I won't. And I stood there, and he said, so what would you like to talk about? I said, I don't know. I said, what do we do? And he says, we try to do another card. I said, I don't have another card. He said, well, then I don't have your car, and you don't have your car. I said, can I bring you money tomorrow? He said, nope. You can go get it today. I said, all right. And then I thought for a minute, and I thought, wait, I do have another card. And when I did that, I pulled out, and what I had given him was an old card. Because I don't know why, you know, you get a replacement card and you don't throw the old one. I don't know why, you know, you just keep it because that's what we do. It's like the old Blockbuster cards. They're still in our wallets. You know, I don't know why, but they're still in there. And I look and I said, hey, man, this one's expired. And the guy goes, right. Because we know he's heard this story a million times, right? But I said, no, seriously, just run this card. I promise, just run that. So he ran it and he looked at it and, of course, it went through. And he said, oh, okay. He said, you never know what to believe. But he's used to running it, and it just didn't come out. But here's the other part. When we run those things, we do that, a lot of us do it without really knowing what the card's going to do. And I know some of us are saying, well, duh. But did y'all know that's not how we should do those things? If you run something and you don't know what the card reader's going to say, this is not a responsible way to manage money. If you don't know what you've done with God's resources, how will God know what to do with you? Where you end up should have some kind of, it should make some kind of difference with how we manage our money. All right, let's do these last two real quick. Number three, money is bigger than you think it is. This is some of us who've gone way this way. I don't care about money. Money's not a big deal. I don't want to worry about money, and that's fine, and that's great. But you're not giving money the respect it needs to have. It's like you seeing a Rottweiler in your yard that's got no collar and it's foaming at the mouth, and you say, he not a big deal. That's dumb. That was dumb. But you want to pretend he's not a big deal. He doesn't exist. He does exist. In Matthew chapter 6, verse 24, Jesus says, no one can serve two masters. Either you hate the one, you love the other, or you be devoted to one and despise the other. And then he has this line, you cannot serve both God and money. King James says, mammon. You can't serve both. But here's my question. If Jesus thought you could serve money, then money's bigger than the piece of paper it's on. I don't serve this. I don't serve paper. I don't serve a microphone. If I serve something, it means I have made it bigger than it is. Church, money is bigger than you think it is. Money has the power. It has some kind of intrinsic power to make you serve it. You say, well, that's nonsense. Great. But let's talk about reality. Let's go back to the text that Brent read for this morning. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Some people, Brent read, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. There are a lot of us who say that money's not a big deal, and yet we serve it like a slave. We serve it. We're slaves to it. You know why we're slaves to it? Because we didn't save enough. We didn't make enough. We didn't manage enough. And all of a sudden, slaves. Look outside and somebody got my car. Wasn't robbed. That was the car company. And we try to play it off. Well, I didn't want that car anyway. Didn't pay your bill. Some of us call each other. It's that time of the month. We call. We're sorry. The cell phone subscriber is no longer using this number. We all know what that means, right? You didn't pay your bill. We all know because all of our bills stop on the 19th too. Let's go on and be real in here. What you do with money will come out. And it makes everybody understand who you serve. Money is bigger than we think it is. And here's the last one. And y'all notice all four of these points are points we already know. But here's the last one. It is the biggest one. Money has the power to make your problems go away. It does. Those of you who say, no, money can't make your problems go away. Yes, it can. It absolutely will. But it will never make you happy. It'll fix your problem. You got a light bill due? Money will fix that. You need a good lawyer? I need a pro bono. You're not going to get a good lawyer doing pro bono. Anybody want to work for free? You want to win your court case? You need some money. You shouldn't say that. You been to court? Any of y'all been to court lately? I didn't say you'd win it, but if you want to win it, you better get some money. If you're relying on somebody to represent you for free, you're going to lose. You're going to lose. I mean, I would bet against you. You need money. There's a country song. I sing it a lot because it's funny. The line says, yeah, I know what they say. Money can't buy everything, but it can buy me a boat and a truck to pull it. And that song is right. You know, money can't buy everything. I know what people say, money can't buy everything, but doggone it, we'll buy me a boat, won't it? I can enjoy my life, and it'll buy me a truck, and it'll buy me something new. I can get my nails done. Not me, but I can get my nails done. I can get something new, and I mean, we can do it all. It can buy me that, but what happens when you buy the boat? And we took it out. And then what happens after about 23 days? Yeah, you come home, what's this bill? Oh, man, nobody got that kind of money. You know what we need? We need a financial advisor to tell me how to do my money. But then we have to start getting rid of the things that made us happy. And did you notice that those things don't make you happy very long? Money makes for very poor company. I'm going to read to you a couple of passages from Ecclesiastes and we'll be done. In Ecclesiastes 4, this is verses 8 through 11, I want you to notice what Solomon says. He arrived at this epiphany. He says, there was a man all alone. Who y'all think this man is? Yeah. There once was a man all alone. It's like a preacher's story. This is you. He didn't have a son. He didn't have a brother. There was no end to his toil, yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. He said, this is what he said. He said, you know, I'm working, but who am I working for? Why am I depriving myself of all this enjoyment? This is worthless. This is a worthless business. You know, I don't have to have any kids because I don't want to support those kids. Some of y'all don't have kids. Y'all, some of y'all who had kids, y'all know kids are leeches. Man, yeah, he's kind of kidding. I'm not. They're leeches. And my kids and some of y'all are teenagers, and I don't want y'all to think we're being mean to you. You will pull every dime out of our life. I mean, we're happy to give it to you. We really are. We love just being broke for you. We do. Really. And those of you who had one kid, you think, why didn't you have more? Because we didn't have nothing else to give. First one took everything. That's why the man Solomon's thinking about didn't have anything. I know a man, he didn't have no kids. He knew why he didn't have kids. He needed his money. But after not having kids and not having a family and keeping all of his money, the man said, this is worthless. Money makes for poor company. I got a lot of money, but money won't love me back. Money makes for poor company. I'm thankful for all my children because they keep me young. They teach me about life. They remind me of why life is so enjoyable. And money cannot buy the happiness they have brought me. Can't buy me some other moments that I wish I hadn't had. But I wouldn't trade them. And money can't buy that. Money makes for poor comfort. Ecclesiastes 5, verse 10, Solomon says, whoever loves money never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. This too is worthless. Have y'all ever noticed that the most miserable people in the world are the richest of people? You remember the story of Pharaoh and Joseph? And Pharaoh had those dreams. Remember the dreams? Pharaoh dreamed of little cows eating big cows. And these stocks eating the big stocks. And Joseph comes in to interpret the dreams, and he said, oh man, you're having nightmares about scarcity. You're having nightmares about not having enough. That's still true today. Those of us who are worried about money are terrified of scarcity. And have you ever noticed that those who don't have any get a great night's sleep? In fact, Solomon says the sleep of a laborer is sweet. You know why? Because when he clocked out at 5, he was done, son. He went home. And some of us don't like that because he stopped off and got him a beer, and he went home and did what Ecclesiastes said. A party made his life merry, and some wine made us forget about it. And then... And those of us who have money, look at him sleeping, not worrying about tomorrow. Not worrying about what if tomorrow comes and we don't have any, and he's going to come in for work Monday and clock in. And get my check. And those of us who have money think, why are you smiling? You should be worrying. And Solomon says, I wish I lived paycheck to paycheck. Some of y'all ever wish for that? The reason we don't wish for it is because we know that there's two sides to money. Some of us get too far over here, and some of us get too far over here. I'm going to close with some stats, okay? Real quick. This is according to Self Storage Association. It's on the internet, so you know it's true. According to Self Storage Association, as of 2016, so this is as recent as I can get, the United States has 2.05 billion square feet of personal storage space outside of the home. 2.05 billion square feet of personal storage outside the home. All of this 2.05 billion is contained in 41,000 facilities owned and operated by about 2,000 entrepreneurs. This includes like Public Storage, Storage USA, Shurgard. Y'all know what I'm talking about? According to this survey, owners of 1 out of every 10 homes also own self-storage. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands in here because I had some self-storage this year, so I'd have to raise my hand with you. What I found fascinating is that the number of people who own self-storage versus the number of people who have owned self-storage 20 years ago, 1996, has risen 75%. Most operators of self-storage facilities report that 90% of all of their storage units are occupied. The average is 15 months, and last year saw a spike of 37% in the number of storage units on the market. But here's the amazing part. Here's the truly amazing part. That the amount of storage required by homeowners has grown, the average house size has also grown. The National Association of Home Builders reports that the average American home in 1973 was 1,660 feet. How many of your first homes were 1,600 or less? 1,660 feet. Ooh, half of us. The average home size today, this is 2016, the average home size is 2950. The average. So let me go on and get this straight. Because by the way, the average children that are born today, the birth rate in the United States is less than 2 per household. That's like 1.7. I don't know how you get a 0.7 kid. They only leech 0.7 of you, you know, away. 1.7 children, where the average in 1973 was actually 3.4. So let me get this straight. Families have decreased. House size has doubled. And we still need personal storage? Why do we need so much space for our stuff? Watch out, Jesus says. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A person's life should not be measured by how much he owns. And finally, godliness with contentment is great gain. We brought nothing into the world, Paul says, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we just have food and clothing, why can't we be content with that? This morning, I think all of us are on different scales when it comes to money. Some of us are not worried about it. You need to start worrying about it because we're tired of footing the bill, like for real. Your family's tired of footing the bill. Some of us just say, money's not no issue. Yeah, I'll talk to your parents, see if they would agree with you. We don't have any worries in the world. It's got everybody else worrying about you. We kind of waiting for you to kick it on. But some of us are worrying too much about money. Some of us are having nightmares about scarcity. And we were having nightmares about scarcity 10 years ago. And I'm not saying, go to bed and take some Ambien and let that roll off, or go have a feast, or go get some wine. I'm not telling you that. What I am telling you is, and what I'm telling all of us, is that if we are going to start understanding money and finances, we need to start understanding where our home is. And if our home is not this earth, then that should have an effect on how I view the things of this earth. Church, if you're not going to end here, why are you investing here? And some of us have bought a lot of real estate because we don't want to leave. Let me tell you a secret. You're leaving whether you want to or not. And let me tell you secret number two, and I've told y'all this before. When you do leave, those of us who are left will sell your stuff and buy a boat. So now that you know that, what do we all need to do? Over the next few weeks, we're going to talk about how we can get a better handle on our money. But this morning, the invitation is, how can I get a better handle on me? And if we can help you do that, won't you come while together we stand and sing?